Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me, far from my home, Kyle, JCRB Krause.
We are far from each other's homes, but that's okay, because we both went and saw Spider-Man anyway. But we'll be getting to that eventually. We'll be getting to that eventually. How are you doing, Ian?
I am in a bind, good sir.
Uh-oh.
Because we had a very unseasonably long, cool, rainy spring. It was absolutely delightful. I would dare say autumn-like an inordinate amount of time. I was spoiled, Kyle.
I'm jealous.
But this week, summer rolled in and said, "What up? I'm here now." And I don't handle heat, Kyle.
I don't either.
I know that I'm preaching to the choir. You're out in the middle of the freaking desert. The idea of the temperature, just the concept of the temperatures that you endure makes me irrationally angry.
It has been surprisingly brisk here lately, as in it's only in the low 100s.
Good night. So, yeah, no. I know I'm a whiny pansy baby.
No,
it's I don't care. It's hot.
It's perfectly fine.
I don't do hot.
I hate the heat. I grew up in Phoenix, and I hate the heat. So, yes, I feel you.
And it's only July, so
yeah.
Don't let all of the... I know we've discussed this on the show, but do not let the stereotypes of Canada fool you. Yes, the winters can be cold, but the summers... Summer is coming.
It gets in the triple-digit Fahrenheit up there. I know that. I've seen it. It's surprising. But yeah,
Meanwhile, you're
in Toronto, so it gets
warm. You've
been
having earthquakes.
I have?
I thought I read that you got a little bit of the aftershock that on the fun that went down in California.
Oh, I didn't feel a thing. I didn't feel nothing. But yeah, there's been some serious shakeups going on in California lately. So that's interesting. Apparently, former patron Valerie said he felt a shakeup earlier.
Goodness.
So one of those the 6.9 one. I'm not sure if he felt the other one too. He probably did, but I know he's in California. So yeah, it's pretty. It's getting pretty extreme over there. I'm wondering if we're marching toward the big one or not. But I guess we'll see. There's always that looming fear of the big earthquake in California.
Yeah, but there's a lot of looming fears in it.
True, true. And where I am, the only looming fear is that it gets hot. We're
is
lucky.
Is it really a looming fear or more of a perpetual existence?
Well, it starts to cool down in like November, and then it stays that way until maybe March. So, for about 5 months out of the year, maybe. 4.5, if we're lucky, it's okay. So, but
you say
yeah.
that, and I want to just crawl into the refrigerator and hide. Just
well, here's the thing: is I'm in the desert, so when it gets cold, it gets pretty dang cold.
It gets
below freezing in winter times around here. In the evenings, it can get below freezing or near freezing. It doesn't get much below freezing. So, anyway, now that we've had some fun talking about the weather. and impending natural disasters.
There you go.
Let's go ahead and what else do we have to talk about before we get to Spider-Man? Anything? Or should we just jump right into it?
We should jump right in because all the cool stuff that I want to talk about, I can't.
Should we swing right into it, I should say?
We should!
All right, good.
Now, as per usual, we're going to be spoiler-free at the start, and we'll give you fair warning before we get into the spoiler territory, and then... You can jump back in when we get to the Q&A. So, for now, you're safe.
All right.
And we are, of course, talking about Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yes, we are. The latest Marvel Cinematic Universe cinematic outing.
This is also the third Spider-Man 2 that we've had, so wrap your head around that one.
Well, at least we've only had one Spider-Man 3 so far.
That's true. That's true.
And hopefully the next Spider-Man 3... will fare a little bit better than the first one.
I mean, one could argue which incarnation of Venom cinematically is worse, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the latest edition, the end of the current cinematic Marvel movie phase, kind of a bookend, a wrap-up, an epilogue to Endgame, so to speak. And it's fine.
It's fun.
It's good.
That's It's funny because it's not much to say other than that. without delving into spoilers.
I mean, and I feel like that does it a bit of a disservice.
Yeah.
Because that makes it sound like it's just there. When it's a perfectly certain, like if this was coming before Infinity War and Endgame,
mm-hmm.
it would be a different feel entirely. It would be a fun next edition in the franchise. The fact that it has come after those two heart-wrenching epics, it's kind of a palate cleanser, which you need.
Sure.
It's kind of fun. It's kind of fluffy. And I think we kind of need that.
True. Yeah. I do like some of the world building they've done as far as what happened after everybody came back.
Right.
From the from getting snapped away. So that's interesting. I'm wondering how that's going to factor in the future. They didn't spend a whole heck of a lot of time on it, though. It just kind of happened, and then they moved on, which I guess is fine, but I would like to see some more depth in terms of like how the world is reacting to everybody half the planet suddenly coming back, half the population suddenly reappearing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we didn't get too much of that other than all of a sudden half of Peter Parker's school suddenly showed back up.
I'm wondering if they're going to just keep it at arm's length, because the more you think about the implications, not only of the snap, but the blip of everyone coming back, there's some harrowing things.
Oh, absolutely.
That I don't even want to bring up, because I was discussing this with Aaliyah after the movie, and I'm like, and she brought up a point, and I'm like, oh, that's.
Oh yeah, grim. like certain things no longer existing when they come back, like planes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a little woo, it's a little scary. Think about
and just what happened on a geopolitical scale, like
oh yeah,
entire governments might have been wiped out.
Yeah, or like certain people of governments might have been wiped out, and then all of a sudden those people who replaced came back, and mm-hmm. it's like what do we do now? We have two presidents. What happens?
And you have entire regions destabilized or finding a new level of peace that is now potentially out the window. How does policy even address it? Just
yeah.
And the movie does not address that at all, and that's kind of fine.
Yeah and that's not even getting into like what's happening on a interstellar level outside of just what's going on Earth. So yeah, right. Yeah. Whew. It's a lot to think about. It's a lot to process. So yeah, I'm kind of glad the movie didn't go there either. It doesn't really need to, but I would like to at some point have that sort of explored. I don't know if Marvel's got the guts to do it though. They do have the guts to do some things though, as we'll get to in the spoilers, I think.
Mm-hmm,
so that's
mm-hmm.
going to be interesting. There's some interesting stuff.
Now, going into it, if I pretty much called the twist when it came to our gallant hero Mysterio, but if you have any inkling of the character at all, I'm pretty sure we were all in the same boat.
The first rule of Mysterio is never trust Mysterio. He has always been and always will be a showman first. He's an actor. He's not real. So there you go. There's the twist.
But
it's Mysterio. I don't know how much of a spoiler that actually is, but there were some people who were like concerned because Mysterio called the Marvel Cinematic Universe Earth 616, and I'm just like, dudes, it's Mysterio. Calm down. It's a lie.
You're taking him at face value. Why?
You do not take Mysterio at fishbowl value. You do not.
But the way they handled it and the reveal and the fallout and whatnot was very satisfying.
Yeah.
And there's some real, for me, there were some really highlight moments of, oh yeah, this is good. This is why you see this on the big screen with the loudspeakers.
Yeah, but and they did some really good sort of building up their relationship with Mysterio and Peter.
Yeah.
They did a really good job of that, just being like, okay, I know Mysterio's like faking this whole thing, but I can still kind of feel for him, you know? There's still something there. You feel like, oh, he's at least trying to be a good person to Peter, and then you realize, no, he's not.
One could debate that point, but yeah, I get what you're going at.
Yeah.
But everyone is, you know, their usual stellar performances. Visually, it was fun. It did what it needed to do, but as you told me, because you saw it before I did.
Yeah.
And you told me stay for the after credits because,
well,
just in case.
I was obviously knew you would stay for the ending credit scenes. You're a longtime Marvel movie goer. You know what's up. You know the deal.
But them after credit scenes.
But these are woo! Like, these are pretty big ones.
Extra spicy.
Yeah. This makes
like
up for the...
Usually it's a submissive, a fun thing. Something you could go, that was cute. No. You need to stay and watch them both.
This makes up for the lack of ones for Endgame.
So, yeah. That's
Yeah. The larger implications are... yeah. Although, I will say, they really cannot... Like, they really can't keep secret identities in the MCU, can they? Like, at all. They just are like, forget it. They just can't do it. It's weird. But
well,
anyway.
Since we're already starting to tread to that territory, if you haven't seen it yet, if you were on the fence, if you're thinking, maybe I'll wait for a video, I say go see it in the theater.
Yep.
There's one sequence that absolutely should be experienced on the big screen, if nothing else. And I enjoyed it. That's my non-spoiler review.
I agree. It was very entertaining. Might be one of the best Spider-Man films. It was pretty great. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than Homecoming, really. And Homecoming was pretty good, but I think I like the way that this just ties in with the greater overall story that we've been seeing so far. That we've been seeing through Phase 4, at least. Or Phase 3, whatever phase we're in this. I don't know what phase we're in. Anyway, that's spoilers. Spoilers!
Alrighty, this is your last chance. Get out. We'll see you over the Q&A.
Alright. Okay, we are at the end of Phase 3. I can't keep these things straight, Ian. It's a real problem.
But there's a lot of movies. It's easy to get confused.
There's a lot of movies, there's a lot of TV, there's a lot of things going on. Anyway, go ahead.
So, where to even start, you know? I guess...
It is tough. It's tough.
The Mysterio scene,
uh-huh,
when he turns on Peter and really showcases what his tech can do,
uh-huh,
was quintessential scary Mysterio. It's like,
I think I see what you did there.
That's why you can take him seriously. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I was like... I was kind of just thinking like, huh, Tony really did screw a lot of people over, didn't he? Makes sense.
And you know me, I love my tiny little forgettable background character, nuancey continuity stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
So when they start pulling out the deep digs,
yep,
Iron Man 1.
They start pulling out deep cuts from Iron Man 1, yeah. It's like, wow.
Doctor was yelled out by Stain. It's like, yes, that scratches the itch. Oh, I love it.
Man.
And, you know, normally in what we've seen of Peter up to this point is not a lot of, I would say, overt combat. A lot of it is deflection or avoidance or redirection or rescue. And most of the time when it's come to blows, it's very light stuff. You know, he's very nimble and bouncy. It's not very much in his face.
Yeah.
So in the final fight sequence, when he's relying completely on the Peter Tingle and just wrecking that hallway.
Why can't they call it a spider sense? Is that under like some sort of copyright thing? Is that something they can't say?
I mean, that,
or are they just trying
great power? I don't know.
Or are they just trying to be funny?
I'd like to think it's funny because I laughed.
It's funny, but it's still like, come on, guys! It's the spider sense. Can you not say that word? Those words.
But man, just him going to town, just nothing held back, just pure focused Peter. It's like, holy crap! He's kind of top tier. You forget about that and when the, he's and kind adorable.
Of, and kind of the way he sort of he used it to kind of overcome the Mysterio's illusions was really cool. So, but you kind of feel for him when he's sitting there getting beat just over and over by these illusions that he can't see past. It kind of helps build that to where it's like, okay, now he can finally see past them and he can finally do the Spider-Man thing that he should be doing. So, yeah, that was great. I know there's some complaints. I've seen some complaints about sort of how this incarnation of Spider-Man / Peter is kind of like, he's so, like, he kind of just relies too heavily on Tony, and he's too, I don't know. I don't really feel it. I think this is a good incarnation of Peter in terms of, like, he's still just a kid, and he's still kind of building up his abilities. He's not, I don't know how to put it, Ian, but I've seen that where people are like, oh, this is not Spider-Man. This isn't how Spider-Man should be acting. He's so far beyond the level of all of these other heroes that he should just be like, and I'm like, well, he's still just a kid, and he still respects Tony, and he still wants to do good by Tony. So I think it makes sense, but I don't know. What do you think?
I think part of it is folks want the shared universe, but they don't want the implications and the ramifications that come from that. The cinematic universe is kind of hinged on Tony. He introduces the concept of superheroics to the mass media, to the people. He is the central figure, not just because he was Iron Man, but because he made himself that central figure. Right. And because he got his hands into every freaking pie, whether he was supposed to or not. And then you have Peter, who has always been a very smart and inventive individual. Yeah, in the books, he invented the web fluid. He invented his web shooters. He invented all the little gadgets that are completely forgotten and not used all that much. So he's kind of along the same track. But in the comics, you had these characters who existed in their own little books for the most part. And then the crossovers were special events. And then over the years, the whole shared universe started to come together, but it was a mess, and it still doesn't quite work despite all the effort being made. With the MCU, that's how it started.
Right.
I mean, they retconned Peter being at the Expo in Iron Man 2. He's been part of Tony's life cinematically from the get-go, more or less. He has been inspired. He has been on that trajectory for his whole life, more or less. And you see the inventiveness still there. When he's on the ship building his own suit with the Stark tech, it isn't he's relying on Stark. It's that he's been given the tools. Look how the next generation is coming up.
Right.
This is not the Peter Parker of the comics who's in his possibly 30s, 40s, whatever the sliding time scale says, who has invented all sorts of high-end polymers and started his own business and been through marriages and blah, blah, blah.
And then
he's not another adult male white character like we've seen with Star-Lord and Tony Stark and Captain America and. He is a kid.
Right.
It's a different type of hero, which is nice. It's not just the same thing over and over and over again.
He has a different dynamic with the rest of the Avengers, which I think works perfectly.
There you go, yeah.
And it works great with his character, and it works great given his age. And I think that's what people forget is like, yeah, and in the Spider-Man, you know, in the comics is, of course, a guy who's like super intelligent on the level of an inventor as Tony Stark. And we may see this version of Spider-Man get there eventually, but he's not quite there yet.
Right.
And I think we're building up to that. And I think that's fine. And also, I got to say real quick that I made a joke about Peter getting stuck in the character creator for 2 hours working on his own suit. I'm like, oh no, he's going to miss everything because he's going to get stuck in the character creator coming up with this cool costume.
I mean, compare that to End of the Spider-Verse, where
it's the same thing, actually. It's very similar.
That's the comparison. You've got the dead Peter with his spider lair and all of his tech and all of his goobers and all of that. He is the Tony Stark, more or less, that the analog
right
in that movie, with Miles following along with Peter B kind of playing a weird quasi mentor role. It's not a perfect one-to-one, but you get what I'm saying.
No, but I understand. Yeah, I understand.
So if we're going to use that comparison, then Tony is the Peter A and Peter is Miles. It's the young kid coming up and finding his own.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be one-to-one with the comics because they're doing something different.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, and I'm glad we're not getting just a rehash, because we've also had, like, five other movies that have been more where, I suppose, Peter is more of an adult-like character. Whether he's actually an adult or not is up for debate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not up for debate. It's laid out. But it's up for debate what his maturity level is. And I think at this point, he's more of a kid. This feels to me more like Spider-Man, so like early Spider-Man, so like Silver Age Spider-Man, more so than like later, where he's older and more mature and stuff. So I don't know.
Now, one bit of growth that I'm sad that we didn't get, at the end of Homecoming, the stinger has Aunt May discovering that Peter is Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And I was really looking forward to them exploring how that affected their dynamic as a family. And instead, we went straight into Infinity War and Endgame. So there hasn't been any time to do that. And we get to Far From Home, and it's been resolved. They know it. They work with it. She's fine with it. They've moved on with their lives. And I feel like that is a big missed opportunity narratively.
Yeah.
But I have no idea where you would have fit it in terms of the films.
Right. And also, we've kind of had that as on film as well previously. I think they're doing a good job of sort of leaving what we've seen previously kind of at the door and just moving on from that. Because wasn't it revealed to May that Peter was Spider-Man at some point in one of the, in both of the other movie series? I don't remember exactly. I don't think
it was in the Sam Raimi trilogy. I honestly didn't see the second film and the second duology.
I thought it was in the Raimi trilogy. I thought it did come up, but maybe not.
If it was, it was in the third film at best, yeah. But I don't recall.
Yeah. Well, I mean, either way, it feels like we've kind of like tread that ground. We at least tread that ground with Mary Jane finding out that he's Spider-Man. So I don't know. It just seems like it's not really a necessary thing to go over, to me at least. It would be nice, but I do think it's funny that Aunt May and Happy Hogan getting together is a thing. That's pretty funny.
Depending on who you ask.
That's pretty funny. I'm okay with it. It doesn't bother me.
Well, I mean, if you ask May, they aren't really together. It's more of a fling. If you ask Happy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, whatever. And also, the MCU's version of MJ is great. I do quite enjoy Zendaya's performance. So she's fun. And I do like that Peter's still striving to have some sort of regular life. That's always been sort of the thing with Spider-Man. It's like he's just a regular kid trying to have a regular life while also coming to grips with having superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they've nailed that pretty well.
And I guess they decided the same thing because, oh boy, J.K. Simmons coming at you. Yes! Hardcore.
Yes. They went and did it. Those beautiful, beautiful people at Marvel, they went and did it. They realized, like everybody else on the planet, that you cannot cast anyone else as J. Jonah Jameson. There's literally nobody else in the entire universe who could play J. Jonah Jameson than J.K. Simmons. There's nobody.
But what are they going to do with this, you know?
I really hope they're not building up to like a one more day sort of thing where Peter has to make a deal with the devil in order to get his identity sealed back.
Oh God, he shows up in Doctor Strange 2 and they fight Mephisto.
Oh God, no.
And on the sly, he just kind of whispers, hey, can you do a thing for me?
Yeah, but to do it, I have to completely erase your relationship with MJ. And it's like, oh, here we go again.
Because, you know, in the books, when he was an Avenger and he was public knowledge, May and MJ lived in Avengers Tower, and they were pushing pretty heavily on the idea of Peter being part of a new Avengers. So maybe that's where they're going with it.
Yeah, maybe. I'm kind of wondering who would be, what are they building, if they're building up towards like a new Avengers, like who would be in it? Is it just going to be the same characters, the side characters getting promoted plus Spider-Man and Captain Marvel?
Maybe. I mean, we know that Falcon's coming back as Cap. They're pushing this Captain Marvel pretty hard. So if you've got, I mean, it doesn't have to be one-to-one, but you've got a lot of these overtones of Peter being kind of the next Tony in a way. You've got Marvel filling in for Thor in terms of the from another place with insane powers.
Yeah.
And you've got Cap. That's your Trinity right there. They're working on Shang-Chi. You've got Doctor Strange rolling around. Hulk is technically still around, just down an arm. You could put together a team.
And you've got Winter Soldier and you got Hawkeye, yeah.
I mean, Winter Soldier could, I guess, fill in for Natasha in terms of the low-level powers, sneaky, shooty-shooty type. But
yeah.
The formula could be stirred up and reserved. I don't know.
But Ian, we're forgetting also with the other end credit scene that's revealing maybe some kind of secret invasion sort of thing going on.
I'm
wondering if Natasha, the Natasha we saw in Endgame, may not be the Natasha that the real Natasha. I don't know. I'm wondering if that's going to be something they reveal in the Black Widow movie that's upcoming.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Whether that's a prequel or not, I don't know. It's sounding like it's going to be, but, you know, end credit scenes, they do crazy things like this.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. See, yeah. I was thinking bigger. I was thinking they were going to introduce S.W.O.R.D. Strategic Worlds, blah, 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 blah.
That's very possible, too. And that is that what we're seeing at the end of Far From Home? Are we seeing Nick Fury of S.W.O.R.D.?
Maybe, because they've kind of played out S.H.I.E.L.D. S.H.I.E.L.D. is...
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is, at this point, on its own. Its place in the timeline currently is nebulous at best.
And let me just say, I really, really liked how they seeded Skrull Fury through the whole thing. Like, when Peter's saying, you know, where are the other Avengers? Where's this guy? And it says, you know,
Captain Marvel, yep.
And the way that Nick says, you know,
do not invoke her name.
I'm like, whoa, yeah. I knew you guys were close, but that seems a little much even for you.
That's Nick. Very strong, okay. Yeah.
But if it's a Skrull,
exactly,
that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, well, okay, that was a very strong response to that. But then at the end, I mean, it's like, all of a sudden, Maria Hill's turning into a Skrull, and I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no. I was expecting Nick to go look at her and go like, what the f-? But then he turns into a Skrull, too. He turns into Talos, and I'm like, what?
So, obviously, the Skrulls have been on S.H.I.E.L.D.'s radar since the 90s.
Right.
They've been fully integrated. I'm just going to assume that it's S.W.O.R.D. at this point.
It very well could be, yeah.
So we could safely assume that the Skrulls have been implemented for at least a little while, which opens up a whole lot of questions, a whole lot of possibilities, like the one you just brought up, which I feel dumb for not even thinking of.
I just thought of it before the show when I was talking to the other guys before we got started, and I'm like, oh yeah.
Like you said, Secret Invasion, and I'm like, no, the Skrulls have been painted as heroic characters, but that's a lot of time for there to be dissension within the ranks.
Exactly. Yeah.
And how cool would Secret Invasion be if it isn't just Skrulls have replaced everybody, but Skrulls could be on your side, or they could not. Skrulls or they could also not be Skrulls.
If there are two,
which one is it?
Or if there are two, yeah, if there are like two factions of Skrulls that are kind of at war with each other. So we've got
spy thriller upon spy thriller.
We have secret civil invasion war.
Like, that would be a really cool, the next, like, big Avengers thing.
Right.
Where you can throw out all the star talent, but who's really who? That'd be neat.
Yeah.
I'd get behind that. Forget Galactus. I want that.
Well, though, it's possible we're building up to some sort of Fantastic Four reveal and X-Men coming in, of course. There's also been some rumors that 2 years from now, we'll maybe start seeing some of the Defenders and Netflix characters start making appearances in MCU movies and stuff. So who knows where they're going to go with that? It's going to be pretty wild. There's a lot of stuff on the table now.
And coming full circle, I feel bad because we're talking about all the cool, neat stuff that might happen in the future,
and we're not talking,
kind of forgotten about the movie.
We're not talking about Far From Home, which is a great movie. It's fun. You should see it.
It's just kind of episodic. It's there. It's not bad. It's not forgettable. It's just kind of, that was nice.
But it also builds up more. It builds up sort of the future. It sort of sets the stage for Phase 4. That's what it feels like. We're setting the stage for Phase 4 and beyond. So I think as sort of a stepping stone to the next phase of Marvel movies, I think it's a good one. And I hope that Mysterio is not actually dead, because as a villain, I really enjoyed Mysterio, and I hope he comes back. But the MCU has a big problem where it sort of kills off its villains. And it doesn't let them breathe, and it doesn't let them come back multiple times usually. So I would love to see like more Mysterio and more other characters, that other villains that are still kicking around. Loki is like the only exception to that, where he tends to stick around, but everyone else.
I mean, the only ones I can think of off the top of my head are like Zemo and Vulture.
Are they both still alive?
Yeah. Well, Scorpion, I think Tinker.
I wonder who else is still in, who's on the raft. I can't remember who's on the raft still.
I mean, I think technically Abomination is still alive.
Some of the Netflix shows have talked about some of the villains from those being put on the raft. So maybe that could be interesting if some of them also happen.
I mean, you would think they would have rumbled this earlier, but I think, you know, with the Avengers kind of officially out, and dear old Thunderbolt Ross being the level-headed and wonderful person that he is, I could see him putting together his own Task Force X / Thunderbolts team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got Zemo alive, we've got Abomination, we've got a few more floating around. You could put together a pretty decent Rogues Gallery movie out of that.
I think so. Are we going to see a sort of Red Hulk, maybe, if we're going talking Thunderbolt Ross? Or
I hope not, because I hate that idea, but
okay.
Maybe.
Well, are we going to see She-Hulk at least? I really want that. I really want She-Hulk. And I don't want, like, dark She-Hulk like we're getting now. I want a fun She-Hulk. I want that.
Of course, I think the Hulk stuff is still tied up in weird rights stuff.
Yeah, it's still, like, distributed by, it still has to be distributed by Universal or whatever, but I don't know. Marvel could probably work out a deal. They worked out one with freaking Sony,
which was
smart. And then they worked out a deal with Fox by, you know, just buying them. Which I guess if you're going to work out a deal, but the one party is not interested in working out the deal, buying out is the only other way to do it. So still frightening, though, to have all our entertainment owned under one roof. A little scary.
I don't know. I wouldn't be opposed to having a lovely corporate sponsor, All Hail Disney. I mean, the Bumblecast is not for sale yet.
We're waiting for the right buyer.
Because we have such a huge cultural impact, the two of us.
It's a little. I think that that discussion is a little bit out of the depth of this episode, in particular. We could definitely talk about something like that, though. I would say sort of the idea of our media all coming under one roof and being owned by one company. Yeah, it could be interesting. I don't know. Either way, I'm still enjoying the MCU. So keep doing that, side Disney. It's fine.
Yes, please make the monkey dance and distract me from the dystopian corporate future that we've got. Anyway, now that we've completely killed the movie. Let's move on to the Q&A.
And stop remaking live action versions of your classic animated films, please. Thank you. All right. Well, we've talked enough about Spider-Man Far From Home, and we also got far from the home topic and started talking about other stuff that it sets up. So I think we're ready to move on. If you want to ask us a question on the Q&A, you can email us at bumblecast@yahoo.com. Ask us on Twitter at bumblecast. Down in the YouTube comments below the video if you're listening to this on YouTube, or via Patreon comments or messages. Let's go ahead and get into the priority Q&A first. These are our lovely patrons who contribute $5 or more over at patreon.com/bumblecast. First up, we've got questions from Andrew D. Why are the Zombots' clothes turning metal too? And where do the Tangle and Whisper stories in annual 2019 stories fit into the timeline? Which issues do they take place between?
The clothing is, once the metal virus takes hold, it kind of encapsulates the victim, top to bottom. It's a metal goo virus. Let's just run with it. In terms of the stories, I can't speak to all the annuals all the stories in the annual, because I had no oversight on those. I think most of them can fit pretty neatly between 12 and 13, because there's supposed to be a nebulous amount of time between those. The Tangle and Whisper mini takes place after... which issue was it?
The issue that introduced... we cannot remember her name. I'm feeling bad now.
I think it's Sonic number 16. It's the one where Tangle goes to visit Sonic and Tails at the lab. It happens after that one, but before the metal virus really starts getting nuts.
Okay. And where's the Tangle and Whisper? Any ideas where the Tangle and Whisper?
Exactly what I just said.
Is that where the miniseries fits in there too, or just the?
Yeah.
Okay.
The annual happens between 12 and 13, more or less, and the mini happens after, I think it's issue 16.
Okay, so the mini will not be concurrent with anything. With the metal virus or anything.
It's very self-contained.
Okay. I'm just getting clarification on that, because I was thinking the one-off preview Tangle and Whisper comic that we've had so far, I was thinking maybe that was what you were talking about. I didn't realize you were talking about the whole mini. Anyway. next question comes from our good buddy, Scruffy Matt. Sometimes the best part of a video game can be its unlockable rewards, which might give you new playable characters or costumes, or change the gameplay in some subtle or dramatic way. Some of these have become tradition for the game, such as Superforms in the Sonic series, and the Red Bricks in the Lego series. And then you have games like GoldenEye 007, where if you play well enough, you can play any level with invincibility, unlimited ammo, and dual-wield every single weapon in the game. What are some of your favorite unlockables in games? Aside from the ones I've already covered, ones that come to my mind is Dragon Kazooie from Banjo-Tooie. Not only does it look cool, but it also gives Kazooie an awesome new fire-breathing attack. Also, bonus points to Edna Mode from Lego The Incredibles, because that was hilarious. I'm not familiar with that, Scruffy. I don't know what happens in Edna Mode, but I love that it's called Edna Mode.
I don't know if Dragon Kazooie would count, since you can achieve it like midway through the game, and it's just a really broken unlockable form. Because there's no reason to change back, and you get infinite fire eggs. So I just feel like that's a broken game mechanic.
Are you saying that the Banjo-Kazooie games have some slightly broken mechanics? No, never. No. Jeez, I'm trying to think of ones, because you already talked about Supersonic, and that's one of the big ones.
I guess in the Tales of series, there are a lot of joke weapons or costumes that you can get, and using those in New Game Plus can sometimes have a minor effect. Like in Tales of the Abyss, the main character, Luke, has very, very long hair, and then about halfway through the game cuts it off as this symbolic cutting ties with who he was in the past and how he's striving to be better, and has the short hair look for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
Now, you can unlock a costume, so to speak, where he has the short hair, regardless of what point of the game you are in. And if you start the game with him in the short hair, a different cutscene will trigger early on where one of the characters comments on the fact that he has short hair.
Huh. That's it? That's all that happens?
it's a small thing, but, you know, it's a neat little detail.
At least they're keeping conscious of what costume you're using instead of just being like, oh yeah, he's cutting off his long hair. Wait, he just had short hair in the scene beforehand. No! Continuity.
Not that I did a lot of it. This was mostly my brother, but in Soul Calibur 2, I'm going to say, for the GameCube, there were joke weapons you could unlock for each character. Like, I think Link got the bug net, which did zero damage virtually.
Yeah.
And there was, I don't know the characters of Soul Calibur that well, but there was a fencer who got, I think it was basically just a cane. And every time it landed a hit, it caused a laugh track.
Okay.
So if you got like, that, but... he had like this one particular lunge where it would land like five small attacks. So, you know, if you could pull that off, and it was hard to block, or maybe we were just bad at the game, but you know, you just hear this audience cracking up as he beat somebody in the face with a cane, and it was really demoralizing, but it was hilarious at the same time.
I'm trying to think of other ones. I can't think of any right now. I'm like way off. I can't think of anything in a game where it's like cool or funny power-ups like that. Man. Or things change. Things change after you beat it. I can think of like New Game Plus in some games. It's like, well, that's kind of lame. Sonic is like the big one as far as Super Sonic goes. In my mind, as far as, that's the only one I can think of right now. I'm out of it, Ian. I'm way out of it. Help me. Can you think of anything else?
I mean, in terms of just, and I'm casting a wide net here on unlockables, all I can think of are like the special joke weapons, like in Skies of Arcadia.
Oh, yeah.
There were the bounty missions, and there was one where you had to take down these doppelgangers of the main cast, and defeating them got you joke weapons where I think Vice got a fish that had, I think, incredibly broken stats, but it had an accuracy of almost zero, I think. And I think it was Aika got, I think it was a lollipop that on hit would always cause confusion, but I think it like could possibly confuse you or like did zero damage or was otherwise useless. Something like that.
Hmm.
Fun little jokey things.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the next one from Blue Title Gamer. My question is, will we be seeing more of Cream in the Metal Virus arc in some way and in the future of the comic besides seeing her map drawing updated every issue, which is really adorable, by the way. I ask this as in recent years, Cream has been reduced to a minor character in the games to the point of only showing up in mobile games where plots aren't needed. Will Cream be handled as such in the IDW series as Sega are more involved with this comic compared to the Archie series? Or will we perhaps see her more in the future having a bigger role like the rest of Sonic's friends? Considering the size of Sonic's cast, I know it's hard to get in everyone, and I always appreciate what we can get.
See, everyone looks at Cream's map and goes, oh, that's so cute! And it's like, you don't know what's going to happen with that map. This...
Uh-oh.
The map will be updated. It's not... When I saw it, like, I didn't know we were going to do that. And I, you know, was shown the preview and was like, oh, this is going to break everyone's hearts. This is brilliant. I love it.
This is sick.
This is demented. I love it.
Is this a knowing smile moment?
Yeah. We'll do that.
Okay. Well, I know there's been some talk about what happens in issue 18 and how much of a monster you are.
Yes, I am. I wear that badge proudly.
Okay. Well, people did want darker storylines in the Sonic Cup. It's like, are you sure? Is this what you really wanted? Oh, boy. I love it.
But yes, Cream will be showing up more throughout the Metal Virus saga. Beyond that, I can't say because that's all I've focused on right now is wrapping up that arc. Beyond that, maybe, I don't know, because like you said, Blue Title, there's a lot of characters. So, you know, whatever I do, whatever another writer does, I can't predict beyond what I'm working on right now, which is the Metal Virus saga, but she will be fairly prominent through that.
All right. And our last priority Q&A question on this episode comes to us courtesy of Chris A. Will you be making a Destroy All Humans comics that focus on Crypto and Pox?
No.
Okay. I didn't think so. Are you familiar at all with Destroy All Humans?
Not in the slightest.
Okay. Who owns the rights to Destroy All Humans comics right now? Because I don't know who it is. And it's not, I don't know if it's IDW or not, but I know you're not involved with that.
If a publisher were to approach me and say, hey, you've done a lot of comic adaptations of video games, you want to do this? I would do my research. I would say, sure, let's destroy all of them humans and go from there. But yeah, I have no idea, Chris. Sorry.
Okay. I've heard good things about the Destroy All Humans series, but I have not played any of them. I'm woefully
there was
behind.
Like a remake or something that's coming out.
There was a recent remake remaster. Other than that, I don't know. All right, so let's go ahead and get into the regular Q&A. This one comes from Digama. Digama F. Wow. You mentioned that a reason, not the only one, but a reason why you're not discussing any future plans you had for the reboot era of Archie was because there was a possibility of you using some of those scrap plans for IDW. And thus, talking about them would technically constitute IDW spoilers. And that makes perfect sense. Now, my question is, whenever you do end up incorporating scrap reboot plans into IDW, do you plan on mentioning after the fact, oh yeah, and this story event that happened had its origins in scrapped reboot plans? Or has there been anything in IDW already that was recycled from scrapped Archie plans?
I think we're deep enough into it now that I can say that the Metal Virus saga was going to be post-300 Archie material.
Okay.
When Maw said Eggman has figured out how to get robotization to work again, that's where we were going. The basic premise of a infectious metal virus was on the table. It was actually on the table for a long time, like an editor before. And the editor said, hey, I want you to come up with a zombie story. And I said, why? He said, because zombies are hot right now. Walking Dead is huge. It's like, okay, I'll think of something and
go figure.
Son of a gun. I thought of something that I really liked. So, okay, let's do it. And says, well, actually, no, we've got Afterlife with Archie coming out. They don't want too much zombie material coming out. So shelve it. It's like, okay, going to come up with new plans. Thanks. And it's like, can we do the story now? No, we got something else going on. Well, how about now? Well, no, there's an event going on. Well, how about now? Well, no, we're going to do something else. And so after we had reached the big cathartic moment, it was going to be, you know, move on from there. And then the book died.
Yeah.
So, you know, we start up IDW. I wanted to keep something very simple, very sonic, very familiar. And that's why we did the Neo Metal arc, because it was very, very deeply rooted into traditional sonic stuff.
Right.
But playing with the toys enough that it was this big celebration of the franchise overall. And when it came to what are we going to do for year two, it's like, well, I have this pretty promising premise that I haven't had a chance to use. Let's dust it off and apply it to this new incarnation. Let's see if Sega will let me turn their iconic, highly protected characters into horrible metal zombies. Oh, yes. This is approved. All of it. Okay, so here we are. Now, obviously, had it gone through with the Archie books, it would have been a wildly, wildly different story.
Of course.
And I didn't have anything point for point figured out, just that was the basic premise that I wanted to apply. So there isn't like a lost plot line that I'm just recycling. It's just the idea of the metal goo.
Yeah. And so, go figure, Ian. You waited long enough to do the storyline now that The Walking Dead is now dead. So
exactly.
Congratulations, you killed The Walking Dead.
What is dead can never die. It only rises again.
And now you have taken over.
Shiny and chrome. I'm mixing my movies, but I think that just made it better.
It's true, it did. It did. How much of this was Terminator inspired? Any of it, or just kind of maybe sort of the metallic?
Nothing directly. I'm sure there's something somewhere, because
the metal
Terminator goo. Terminator 2 is one of those movies that just kind of permeates nerddom.
Right. You really can't get away from it. I've I've known things about the Terminator franchise that I can't remember a time I didn't know things about them. So, yeah, it's like, okay, now, you can't escape it.
The full-on T-1000, you know, recovering from damage, like, folks were really shocked when Rough and Tumble got really badly mangled and then came back from it. And it's funny because when I submitted the script, the editor said, that's a little much, maybe dial it back a bit. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably going too far. Like, it really begs the question of just how much flesh is still there. Yeah, that's right. We'll just dial it back. And then I see the final art, and it's like, oh, no, actually, they went full bore. All right. Sure. Okay.
Have fun with that. This is some serious nightmare feel stuff. I love it. It's great.
But, you know, at least I got to see that as I was getting into the story arc that's coming up, because we have Omega and we have Zombots. So now you can imagine how that's going to go.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All right. Let's go and get into our next question from Taylor R. I noticed that in IDW Sonic issue number 11, after Blaze has dropped her burning form, she says she can't transform again because the Soul Emerald's power is diminished. Later in issue 12, she plans to use the Soul Emeralds to return home. Do the Soul Emeralds not scatter after use Dragon Ball style like the Chaos Emeralds do, or is that plot element being done away with entirely?
No.
Okay.
The Soul Emeralds don't seem to really do like the Chaos Emeralds do. Chaos Emeralds are very much Dragon Ball. They're very much Dragon Balls. You use them, they fly away. The end.
Yeah.
Blaze's, the Soul Emeralds seem to react differently. Like, the whole reason she was on Sonic's world initially was because she was tracking them down. The reason why she had to track them down in Rush Adventure was because, what was it? Had they been stolen? Had they been scattered? The point was they were not where they were supposed to be. And the general vibe I got off of it was that the Soul Emeralds seemed to be fairly reliable in their location. Plus, one could argue that since she wasn't in a dire final boss mode fight, that she was able to power down in such a way that she was able to retain them so that she could go home. Or you could argue that they react differently on one world versus another. The point is, Sega did not give me a note on that, so that's fine.
All right. Well, there you go. I would say that Chaos, being in the name of Chaos Emeralds, is, I would say, more of an idea, gives more of an idea of what they do versus Soul Emeralds, which, like, Chaos Emeralds is like, do they just chaotically spread out after you use them? While Soul Emeralds just, you know, they're just there. They're just cool. I don't know what I'm saying, Ian. Should we move on? Let's move on.
Let's move on.
Okay. This question comes from Derek N. I heard on TV Tropes, the running news site on the internet. That's me, by the way, saying that. Me, Kyle, saying that it's the forerunning news site on the internet. Anyway, don't believe everything you read on TV Tropes. That IDW Sonic can't use the word Mobius anymore. Is that just for the planet's name or all uses? If it's the latter, what would happen if the story 100% required that Sonic and friends go to Sonic Riders Zero Gravity's Mobius Strip location? All right. First of all, Ian, let me say something here. A Mobius Strip is a real thing. It's a real shape.
Yeah.
And the track is shaped like a Mobius Strip. So that's different. That's not... You can still call things Mobius Strips, I think. Is that not off... That's not off the table, is it?
No.
Okay.
We don't have access to any of the old cartoon material. And the cartoon material had Sonic's world called Mobius. The animal people were called Mobians. Yep. The currency was Mobiums. There was a Mobadoom at some point. Moba, Boba, Doba, Doba. The IDW book is following much, much closer to the Sonic canon, which is more clearly defined than it was 30 years ago, almost. 28 to be exact, but you know what I'm getting at.
Sure.
So no, Mobius was an old like localization term that is no longer in use. So Sonic's world is Sonic's world. And the living beings on it are, as far as I know, animals. So that's what we got. That's what I'm working with.
Yeah. Isn't a Mobius strip like the thing Tony pretty much uses to figure out how time travel works in Endgame?
Yeah, it's some kind of mathematical thing about paradoxes and things and affinity and whatnot.
It definitely looked like a Mobius strip just popped up right in front of him when he was working on that. It's like, oh, okay. I see where this is going. Duh.
Mobius strips are an actual thing. It's right. Just...
Yeah, yeah.
No, the planet cannot be called Mobius because that's not what it's called.
Yeah. So yeah, you can use the word Mobius. You just can't use the word Mobius to name the planet that Sonic's world is called.
Right. Sonic's planet is not called Mobius in the comic.
It's called Sonic's planet. If you look it up in a star constellation thing, you'd see various random names of planets, and then you'd see Sonic's world. Right.
I don't think Blaze's planet has a name, and human planet is an Earth either. I think it's just human planet.
It's called Blaze's world, and it's called Human's world. And Sonic's world is called his world.
On the other hand, we have Planet Wisp, we have a planet Donpa, and if you really want to count it, the Black Comics. So.
And we have Little Planet.
And Little Planet, yeah.
And whatever else. Whatever else. Anyway. And we have whatever Aaliyah just said in the background right there. I don't know what that is. Anyway, that's it for questions for you, Ian.
Yeah, but I have a question for you, and it comes from Aaron.
For me? What is it?
This question is for Kyle. What music score or song in a video game do you think is best of all time? For me, it's Suicide Mission Song from Mass Effect 2.
That's a really good one. But for me, it's going to be Moon Over the Castle from the Gran Turismo series. Look it up. It's very good. Yeah, that's like still tops for me as far as video. It's just so, you know, it's a great intro song. It's like perfectly soaring and uplifting and just like it really encapsulates like getting ready to go. Like, yeah, I'm ready. It's kind of one of those sorts of things. So it doesn't really have a storyline impact, I guess, like the Suicide Mission does in Mass Effect 2. But it's still a freaking fantastic song. I have a lot of other songs that I could talk about too, but we don't. Let's move on. We're already at an hour, so let's not worry about it too much.
I'm not even going to touch it because there is no possible way I could pick.
It's tough. But I just always.
I can't even narrow it down to a franchise. Like if he's the best song ever, period, in Sonic. Not even going there.
I just always default to that song. Like that's my default answer for this question. I've gotten to a point where I just have a default answer for it. But yeah, I mean, we could sit here and we could have a whole episode on this topic.
Oh my God. Yeah. Easy.
Yeah, absolutely. But for me, I think that would be sort of the song that encapsulates my feelings about this question the most. Check it out. Moon Over the Castle from Gran Turismo. Composed by Masahiro Ando and also performed by T-Square, the band T-Square, under the name Night Song. So it's a very good song, but it's also very confusing because it has two titles and two performances from two different things. And yeah, it's weird, but yeah, it's all the same song.
All right. Before we wrap it up, we're going to give a big thank you to all the patrons who make this show possible.
Do it, Ian.
Big thank you to Daniel H., Eric F., Connell T., Alex P., Blue Title Gamer, Koopaling Crew 128, Frederick, Andrew D., Scruffy Matt, Saturn Flecky, Chris A., John B., Jennifer R., Revan the Light, Lisa M., Duizdiz Den, Dave M., Daniel B., Mike B., Samuel P., Sam Cybercheck, Digama F., Wow, Dragon Superfan, Brody M., Neil H., Justin G., Daniel M., S., Silly String, Takaro, Lee H., K., Chevelle, Don B., Sam Fritz, Taco Elgato Comics, John M., James K., Adam B., BT, Overthinking Films, and Ron.
There's some new names in there. Welcome aboard, folks. Thank you for your support. We love you, platonically. At least I love you platonically. I don't know how Ian feels about it.
Well, we've already talked about selling out. I'm pretty easy.
Okay. Well, I mean, are you going to sell out your romantic love? Can you do that? You're married. I mean, can you do that?
If you want to find my rates, head over to bumblekeeking.com. That has all sorts of tantalizing information about me. Or you can stalk me romantically on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC.
Have you had anyone do that yet? I'm curious.
Not romantically, no.
Okay. I can imagine you have had a few others. Yeah. Anyway, you can follow me
different
on...
Different kind of obsession.
Anyway, yeah. yeah, tell me about it. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter at KyleJCRB, or you can head on over to KNGI.org, where you can find archived episodes of the Bumblecast, and you can also find the like iTunes feed link and all that stuff over there, Google Play, and whatever other things we're on. What are we on, Ian? I'm completely forgetting. Stitcher? We're everywhere. Anywhere you get your podcasts, you'll find the Bumblecast. But you can also find Nitro Game Injection, which streams live on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. That's my other show, all about awesome video game music. So if you enjoyed, if you went and listened to Moon Over the Castle from Gran Turismo and you enjoyed that, tune in to Nitro Game Injection and you'll hear more awesome music like it. And other awesome music that may not be like Moon Over the Castle, but still really good.
Follow updates on the show over on Twitter at Bumblecast and contact us at bumblecast@yahoo.com.
And don't forget to head on over to the Bumble store to get some Bumble gear. You can head on over to shop.spreadshirt.com/Bumble store and buy some stuff there. It helps us out.
And join us every Sunday evening around 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, give or take, for Bumblecast Gaming Live, where Kyle or I, or sometimes both of us, stream games for your entertainment and or amusement.
Indeed. Also keep an eye out on Twitter for announcements about other random game streams that may or may not happen, especially like when a new Sonic game comes out or something. We've been making it a habit of kind of streaming those. So it just depends. Keep an eye out. But the regularly scheduled ones happen on Sundays. So we'll see you there.
And as a reminder, these are no longer patron exclusive. Our wonderfully generous patrons have made them free to everyone. So come on in and join us.
Indeed. Yes. Go ahead on over, and if you're not subscribed to our YouTube channel already, go ahead and subscribe and get notifications about when we'll be doing the live shows. And check it out.
This is going to wrap us up for a Bumblecast episode 95. We march steadily onward to Bumblecast number 100.
Oh, boy. We had a lot of questions for number one. You should see the list.
My throat's going to be raw by the end of it, isn't it?
It's pretty big. I don't know if we're going to be doing all the questions, Ian. We have a lot. We have a lot of questions specifically from two people, but I won't call
it. It's our anniversary episode. We can make it a 2-hour episode. Why not?
I won't call them out specifically under who those two people are under the bus, but you know, if you follow Bumblecast on Twitter, you probably have a good idea of who one of them is.
That's wrapping us up. Have a good night, everybody.
All right. See you guys later. Bye. Spider-Man Far From Home.
Show is over. We say something funny to trick people into listening to whole show and listen to plugs at end. Here is hilarious ending caption.
Oh, it's
very, very bad Russian accent.
It's so funny. Ha ha ha, so funny. What are you sorry about?
I kept everybody waiting this long.
Oh, it's fine. I kept the people entertained, I think. I tried. I make no guarantees. Scruffy says I danced for them. Metaphorically, of course.
Well, I do hope it was a merry jig.
Maybe. It was something. Probably frightening.
So it was the Thriller dance.
No, I can't dance like that.
Why not?
Because I'm too white. You've been listening to The Bumblecast, a co-production of Bumble King Comics and the KNGI Network. Original theme music composed by Ken Coda Snyder. Remixed intro by T-Lopes. Find out more information, along with podcast feeder links, MP3 downloads, and more at bumbleking.com and kngi.org. Imagine if they gave Natasha a Russian accent, if they kept her Russian accent for the MCU. Yeah, because the comics seem to establish that she still has a Russian accent, or did. But
well,
she is a
proud.
She is a. It's probably just bad writing.
It's proud Marvel movie tradition to introduce an accent in the first appearance and then lose it by the second.
It's a good point. It's a good point.
Compare Wanda to Avengers 2 to Endgame.
I don't remember her having an accent at all in.
Look up the what are they called? The Honest Trailers for the entire MCU. They do ones for, you know, individual movies, but they did an Honest Trailer for the entirety of the MCU, and they highlight the hilarious dropped accents.
Well, I mean, I think it's usually for the better. And they did have one of the characters in Agent Carter was a Russian super spy who had no accent, I think, until she was revealed to actually be a Russian super spy. So you could probably do that. So maybe that's just what it is. She's just like, she's just using an American accent just because, I don't know, it's what she does now.
Safeties are off, so is accent.
Sure. It can't be because of an American trying to do a Russian accent always sounds horrible or anything. No, never, never.
Quite possibly.
No, never.